Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now, in a city where time disappears. We create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big, we go all night, and here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Arash Markazi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. A lot to get into here on a Friday. It is March Madness. We are in full swing of March Madness. I know a lot's going on today, Friday, but I really want to recap Thursday. I was out at the South Point with Jihei. We were out there with Steve Karp, Will Despard from the Las Vegas crew. But want to bring in now from the Sporting Tribune, Brandon Deutsch, Grant Mona, Jihei Wiley. Brandon, there was one game that you had circled and one game that closed out the Thursday viewing, and it did not disappoint in terms of it being a very exciting game, but maybe one of the worst non-calls in recent tournament memory, an absolute clean block that was called a foul. And in a sport where apparently you can review every play but that, very frustrating. Brandon, your thoughts on what we saw last night?
Absolutely ridiculous. I said on air, in yesterday's show, I was saying Samford was a lock, right? Like, I thought they were going to win for sure. I still think they're the better team. They have a great full court press. They have some good shooters. They have some physicality. They play with a chip on their shoulder, and I think they could have done damage if they had moved on to the round of 32. I had them in all of my brackets, and it was so crazy to see how bad they played in the first half and a half, basically, first, like, I guess you could say 25, 30 minutes of that game, they looked horrible. They were down 22. Press wasn't working, couldn't play defense. And then once they figured it out, they're down one and they had that chase down block. And I guarantee you, I would put my life on it that if they had, they didn't call a foul there, they would have went and scored, won the game. That's just how momentum works. Anybody who's watched sports, played sports, understands that. And once they had those free throws, it was, it didn't matter what play call they had. That just took the life out of the stadium.
Grant, you touched on it, and I said it as well. I mean, I've never seen a cleaner block. I mean, sometimes you'll have a situation where you may get the guy's pinky or his index finger, and you're like, bro, that was like a 99%. That was 100% block. And for it to be called in that situation, it's got to be a clear foul. I mean, you cannot get 50-50 calls, but at no point was that a foul. What did you think as that play transpired?
First of all, I thought it was an incredible defensive play. That's probably one of the best fast break blocks I've seen without fouling. Usually you see those types of plays and it's an automatic foul. I think that's why the ref called it. Yeah. I think they were just assuming he was trying to foul him just to put him at the line and prevent the two. But for Samford, you guys all hit it right on the head. That was the turning point. Yeah. And that's just so unfortunate because they worked their way back to get it to a 1-point game. And they're playing this Kansas team that, a lot of people, they like them. A lot of people don't, but, Samford, I thought that they had a great chance to win that game. And, after that, Kansas kind of went on a little bit of a run, but, Samford hit some really clutch shots, late in that game to cut it to one, to cut it to three. They just seemed like they could not go away even under a minute left. So, that was a tough one. Obviously, usually the bigger schools get the benefit of the doubt anyways. I feel like that's why. But my question is, why do we not have review there? Have any type of review? Look, I understand maybe in the regular season. I understand maybe in the conference tournament. Okay. In March Madness, when these guys' playing careers are on the line, when these guys' draft stock is on the line, coaches are on the line, We need to have review. I'm sorry. We need to have review for as much as possible, especially with the stakes that are at hand. I think that's really ridiculous.
You know, where it clearly should be in play is the last 2 minutes where, listen, I mean, do you want to review everything from the beginning of the game? And I know these things add up. You know, 2 points is 2 points, whether it's at the beginning of the game or at the end. But in the last 2 minutes of a game, I fully think everything should be reviewed. Jihee, your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think, yeah, last 2 minutes, absolutely. I don't think that there should really be a question, especially in the playoffs, right? Like, especially for March Madness, it's such a pivotal moment. I'm just annoyed that refs don't get penalized for stuff like this, right? Yeah. Like, they're like, it doesn't matter if they're right or if they're wrong. Like, and especially when they're wrong, there's no major penalty. There's no fine. There's no, like, even a slap on the wrist of like, hey, buddy, you know, we got to be better. Let's do this and that a little bit better. There's nothing.
They still allow Angel Hernandez, by the way. I just had to say that to umpire in the big leagues because of the union there. And I agree with you completely. There should at least be some discipline. I know they don't make money to the level that the NBA players or MLB players or NFL players do. So maybe obviously not as substantial fines as the other ones, but they should be held responsible for sure.
Yeah. I mean, this is an across the board thing. This isn't just, and I get it, the error is human, but that kind of mistake could have been easily prevented if you just went back and reviewed it. And look, you went back and reviewed for time purposes a play that was obviously out on the other player. Like, it was just, but you can't review the block. What times are we living in where, like, common sense isn't common sense anymore? Like, I don't understand it. I don't get it. I'm baffled by the fact that these refs just aren't even contemplating the consequences, and nobody's holding them accountable. That's the sadder part, is that nobody's going to sit there and be like, we should fine you guys for that, or we should, you know.
But you know what, to your point, Jihee, it's the end of these guys' careers for a lot of them. A lot of them won't be in this position again. So, like, even if they slapped them on the wrist, even if they didn't do another tournament game, it's too late for the players at Stanford. It's too late for Brandon's brackets. They're busted. So it's unfortunate because again, that's something that should so clearly be reviewed in the last 2 minutes of a game, or at least a tournament game. Last 2 minutes of a tournament game, like, let's review fouls, like, get a bounds, 3 point, like, what does it matter? Like, we play all this time, you know, you play the entire season to get to this point. Do not let it was so clearly a clean block. Let that poor call dictate it. And again, there was a slight delay where I'm like, I know there's new rules like every now and again. So like, did that rule change where like they're going to review it? And it's like, nope, they're at the free throw line. And I'm like, well, that's it. That's the ball game. Brandon, outside of that, obviously tough loss for your bracket, your thoughts on the first day of the tournament? Trying to think, like, however, you know, listen, obviously, like, the big upset to Oakland beating Kentucky, that was a big one. But your thoughts on the first day of the tournament?
Yeah, it's funny because I went out and I saw a friend that had played baseball at Kentucky, and I said he was worried. And I was like, you don't have to be worried. Oakland's not going to beat Kentucky. And then obviously the fifth year guy, the graduate student who played in Division II, and just showed a lot of moxie and just a great shooter. Knows his role, dominated that game. We see it so many times where guys just are ready for the moment because they know that this is it. Like, this pressure, like what Jihee and what Arash you just mentioned. That's why it's so important to get the right calls in the moment. I even look back at the Kentucky game. Like, I feel like that game was the refs were way more neutral than the game against Kansas. I'm not. And by the way, I think Kansas, if you had watched that game, would have loved reviews in the last 2 minutes, because there was a few times where they thought that there wasn't a foul when Stanford got to the basket, right? So that could have changed momentum as well. I think all schools would be in favor of that. I just don't get how that's not implemented. As for the other games, I thought it was kind of a boring first day comparatively to recent years. Oregon, I think people knew once they won the Pac-12 tournament that they would pounce South Carolina. NC State was the popular pick with New Mexico, you know, today. So New Mexico is probably going to win that game, right? And that they won, right? Like, Arash, I'm trying to think. Only Oakland. Yeah, that was huge.
Was the big one.
Yeah. But, I mean, we really wanted Long Beach State to try and make it close with Arizona. They did for a while. I even thought South Dakota State could give Iowa State some trouble, and they did for a while. And I actually picked Morehead State in a bracket, and I thought they had a chance to beat Illinois. And they were up at halftime. And then Illinois just, you know, the better teams, Arash. I feel like this is a year – perhaps, and you know, we'll see throughout the weekend where we could see, you know, 3 seeds, 2 seeds, 1 seeds, just kind of handling business. We're going to see a few more upsets, but I really wanted the 15 seeds to show up today, and they didn't.
Yeah, I mean, the beauty of March Madness is that you don't know what's going to happen, right? Whether it's a 16 seed, 15, 14, things like that. I mean, if it's chalk, I mean, that's not going to be the most exciting. We'll see how Friday plays out, and as we go into the weekend, and then next weekend as we go into Sweet 16. And the West Regionals for the men, by the way, are in Los Angeles. Grant, highlight for you. Again, I was watching the Long Beach State game with Jihei, and we'll get her thoughts on that and the tournament in general in a bit. But what was your big highlight of the first day of the tournament?
Yeah, I wanted Long Beach State to do something, and they had me for a little bit there, but obviously it didn't come to fruition. I think another one was maybe Duquesne over BYU, and I know BYU's in the WCC and they don't get a lot of credit. Shout out to the WCC, by the way, but that was a pretty cool upset for me. But yeah, I think, you know, Brandon hit it on the head. It was, there's not really much activity compared to years past. Like, obviously there was a few upsets, but there was no, you know, 15 against 2 or 16 against 1. You know, obviously the first couple of days, Arash, you mentioned this a few days ago, the first couple of days of March Madness are some of our favorites, right? Yeah. Because you get to see some of these big, huge upsets. And it's just so deflating when a team comes back and they're right in it, a team like Samford, and then they lose at the end. Like, for me, that is just more devastating than if they were to get blown out, obviously, but like, it just hurts so much to see a team like that go down. I mean, a team that impressed me, Oregon. I mean, they pummeled South Carolina, I mean, by 14. I think they have a good chance to maybe get to the Sweet 16. They have a really good team. Obviously, they won the Pac-12 tournament. But, not a lot of huge upsets. But that doesn't mean – I feel like, you know, we get caught up in these upsets. And obviously, we want those to happen, you know, for our brackets and obviously just for excitement. But I feel like we're still going to have a very competitive – tournament now that we have some higher seeds advancing, right? Because the higher the seed usually means the better the basketball. Usually, I'm not going to say all the time, but you're going to get a lot of high quality basketball if we see a lot of higher seeds go to the Elite Eight and the Final Four and when we get down to it. So I'm actually excited for that because we get to see a lot of draft prospects. We get to see a lot of, you know, high end basketball. So I'm still excited for it. It's just, yeah, it was a little bit of a weird day one.
Yeah, I was with you for Long Beach State. And I mean, listen, I mean, it would have been a heck of an upset. I mean, when you talk about a team that lost 5 straight to finish the regular season, fires the coach before the Big West Conference tournament, win that. And again, listen, they held their own. They had a lead in the first half. Your thoughts on that game and the first day of the tournament?
I'm with Brandon on the first day of the tournament. It was kind of lackluster, to be honest with you. It was a lot of missed shots. Some teams with some easy missed layups couldn't make any bunny shots, anything like that. It was kind of disappointing. But, I mean, overall, it's still great, you know, because it's March, it's madness, it's great, you know. But as far as the Long Beach State game and a lot of other matchups as well, if you took the first half, you are falling right now. Like, you did a good job on your bets because I didn't even contemplate that. I was like, I'm not betting the first half. Like, that, those bets are for suckers. But all of these guys covered, right? Like, they, and then some in the first half. It's the second half that they obviously hit their demise for, at least for Long Beach. I mean, Long Beach covered in the first half. So, that being said, I was hoping for Long Beach to kind of rally and be like, we're going to do this for our coach since he's working for free now. But, you know, it is what it is. The better team won. U of A's proved that all season long. So I can't really complain about it. I'm just stoked that they made the tourney for this guy's last year, his last season. So go Beach still. Thank God we still dominate in volleyball and baseball. So I'm good with it.
And Brandon, real quick before you go, I got a text from a friend saying this was the Pac-12's last little sign-off. That was a Pac-12 officiating crew that blew that block call. So kudos to one last.
Of course it was.
One last Pac-12, hashtag Pac-12 ref moment here on their way out the door.
Yeah, I just wanted to add one thing because GA brings up some very good points about teams missing layups and not looking as advertised. McNeese State and Gonzaga was supposed to be a very close game. Those were teams metrically, if you look at the advanced stats, that played very similar, high octane offense, well coached, dominant throughout the year, even though Gonzaga, you know, a little less. St. Mary's kind of eclipsed them this year. At the end of the day, Gonzaga waxed them. It wasn't even close. So I think Grant's WCC could be better than people think because where BYU, they're not in the WCC anymore, are they, Grant?
No.
They lost, but they you can't be saying that's the WCC pride. WCC's 1-0, and they're about to be 2-0 today. I don't expect Grand Canyon to upset St. Mary's.
Yeah. By the way, one of the prop bets or one of the bets that I really became enamored with today, and GK brought it up with the first half, was the first to 15. So we're sitting there at the South Point with GA, and I'm just watching people like lose their mind at a game that was, let's just say, you know, 12 to 13. And I'm like, what? And it's like, no, like they have money on the first to 15. And there was a ton of games that were very close. And so, that's one of these bets in Las Vegas that come tournament time. And so, by the way, kudos to the folks at the South Point. You are not going to get a better deal in terms of, you know, if you show up to Vegas and you did not kind of pre-plan this thing and you don't have a ton of money to spend, again, you know, if you wanted to get a cabana or a couch or a private party or whatever, you know, we had a table and it was, you know, $2 hot dogs, a $4
that's crazy
beer. Yeah, and I tweeted out the menu and it's like,
I saw that.
It's like from like a different time. I mean, gee, we had a blast, right?
Dude, it was like old school Vegas, by the way. It was like back in the day, old school Vegas, wow. Where like you, like, it's like $2 hot dogs and you can put all the fixings on the hot dogs. So it's like,
oh yeah,
you don't have to like just have ketchup and mustard on it and that's it. Like they gave you chili and cheese. Like, dude, I had the best hot dog of my life there. I had like meat sauce on top with some queso on top, and then I added onions and I added jalapenos. That was the best hot dog I've had in like years. Drinks, wine was $5. I had a few mimosas, maybe too many mimosas, but I had a few mimosas, $5 mimosa.
No such thing.
Like, I'm telling you, South Point, they do it right, man. They did a great job. And then they have a basketball court in there. I have nothing but great things to say about South Point. I had a great time. It was a lot of fun.
Kudos to Steve Karp for hooking that up. And by the way, Karpy tonight, Friday night, Las Vegas, Bruce Springsteen. I mean, Karpy does travel the world. And I say the world, I mean, he was in Europe a year ago to see Bruce Springsteen. So he's calling it a home game for him. Bruce Springsteen's at T-Mobile Arena. I mean, this is my favorite time of the year, though, guys. I mean, I Thursday might not have been great, depending on when you're tuning into us. Friday may be almost done, or you might be tuning in for like the last few games. But like the first two rounds are my favorite weekend in the sports calendar. It is such a fun time here in Las Vegas. Really quick, Brandon, it's, you know, Samford didn't work out, but generally speaking, like everyone's championship team is alive. That's always crazy when the team that you had winning the entire thing loses in
Day
one. I don't think that happened, right? Who do you have winning the whole thing?
I didn't have Kentucky. In fact, if you look at history, there's only 8 teams that can win. I believe it's – I'll list them really quick because I know we're running out of time. I think it's Auburn, UConn, Houston, Purdue, Arizona, Marquette. Did I say UConn already?
Yeah.
North Carolina, and there's one other team. And I apologize if I'm forgetting. But defensively and offensively, rank in a system since, you know, 2000, every national champion has ranked in that So, I mean, I picked Houston in one, North Carolina in another, UConn in another. And I love Auburn. I think Auburn has the goods, but we'll see. Princeton got waxed in the NIT, so it makes me think Yale's weak. So we'll see.
What about you, Grant? Who do you have winning the whole thing?
I got UConn. I like Brandon said, there's so much good defense in this tournament. That's why I really love. I mean, I don't love it. Obviously, I love.
Oh, did we lose?
Upset.
Yeah, I think we lost it.
Nope. We get down to it. So,
yeah.
Oh, shoot. Hey, guys, what's going on?
We got you.
You're back. You're back.
I was just going to say, I don't know if you heard. Despite I said UConn, I love their defense. I love that we're going to get high-level basketball, and I'm going to leave it at that in case I cut out again.
That's okay. GK, real quick before we close out, who do you got winning the whole thing?
I will live and breathe and eat and die by it. UConn, 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 UConn. If you've just watched them throughout the season, they are the only team that is consistent. They've gone through their ups and downs, and they've had to deal with, you know, different rotations and all the like, but outside of that, they're in the top 15 defensively, in the top 15 defensively ranked. Man, when they can hit it from the outside, from the exterior, they're great. They have great inside presence. They have everything. They have everything. Hopefully they don't get soft from the three, but they have everything. So I'm still sticking with UConn. And they haven't played yet, so
there's still hope. Listen, and UConn is my pick as well. You know, I'm having seen them firsthand in Las Vegas during that West Regional, and then seeing them win the whole thing last year in Houston. All right, let's leave it there for now. When we come back, we'll give you the latest on Shohei Ohtani and the Dodgers as they make their way back to Los Angeles. When we come back here, right here on the Mightier 1090 in Southern California, the Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network.
We'll be right back with the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now, in a city where time disappears. We create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big. We go all night. And here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio. Still clown with the underground
when we come around. Welcome back to the Arash Markazi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. Just as a reminder, if you have a question or comment or want to win tickets for an upcoming game in Southern California, Las Vegas, or Hawaii, call our hotline 310-400-0340. Wanted to kind of give you the latest on the Shohei Ohtani news. Again, you know, not a lot has broken since the last time we chatted. Again, it's going to be, I think it might be a little bit before Shohei feels comfortable. Again, he, just generally speaking, was not comfortable talking to the media. He did not. His translator is obviously in a part of this scandal that he's involved in terms of, you know, how that is all going to play out. But, you know, just to give you a quick backstory before we dive into it again, or the latest on it, is that representatives of Ohtani have contacted law enforcement authorities and have asked them to investigate this massive theft of money that that they claim happened at the hands of his interpreter. GK, we didn't get a chance to connect with you yesterday. It's just a fascinating story in the sense that within one day, the story changed from essentially Shohei, maybe helping out his friend who had a gambling debt and paying off $4.5 million, wiring that money to a bookmaker. And then I think perhaps someone within his camp saying, nope, that's not the, don't want to implicate ourselves in that way. Let's run this back. Again, very confusing. More questions than answers. What's your general thought of what is happening here with Shohei Ohtani?
This might be a odd take on this. Sorry. But I think it's a little sus, right?
Yeah.
It seems really suspect that you're changing, like you have this initial story come out, you know, helping out a friend, blah, blah, blah. And then now your lawyers are going into it and being like, no. He stole from him. It's a, we're going to look and see if like there's theft going on. It's like,
yeah,
you went real quick to changing your story. So it just seems a little on the suspicious side. I'm kind of disappointed, right? Because we have never seen something like this out of Shohei, right? He doesn't seem like the kind of person that, like, it seems more viable that he was trying to help his buddy and clear a debt. That sounds more like the Shohei that we've been told exists in our world versus this, like, person who stole from them. Also, by the way, I don't want to, like, 100% represent the Asian culture because that's not the case. Obviously, everybody's different. But at least when I was growing up, theft was like a major no-no. I know that like normally it's like everybody shouldn't be stealing and like that's just a common thing that you're taught when you're a kid. But really, truly, like it's like you're bringing disgrace to your family, you're bringing disgrace to your culture, to your community, to like it's a little bit heavier in certain communities and in certain cultural backgrounds that you know, you bring dishonor to the family, or to your name or whatever. So I just, that's why I'm so confused at what's going on right now with him. And it's really just disappointing. And I hope things work out for him. I hope this is the wrong, you know, I hope that it kind of sucks that I'm thinking this, but I hope that he did get stolen from, you know, I hope that he did get back and he was, you know, not to blame for this. So we'll see what happens, but I hope nothing but the best for this kid. But like, it seems really suspect.
Yeah, and from all accounts, his translator was also a beloved figure for those who kind of got to know him. Ipe Masuhara had been Shohei's translator and interpreter since he joined the Major League Baseball. Since he's been in Los Angeles, and Dipe is from Southern California himself. I think most people hope that this works out for all parties involved, but I think that there's still a lot of questions in terms of who knew what, when did they know it, and really, when you're talking about a $700 million superstar, like what was exactly Shohei Ohtani's involvement? Because as much as I want to believe that he didn't know what was going on, and by the way, it could come out that he had absolutely no idea. It's at this point a little hard to believe, again, mainly because of the changing of the story. You know, if they had just one story for the entire length of this, that would be one thing. But when the story gets changed that quickly, there's a little bit of smoke there. Grant, your thoughts again. I know we talked about it on the show yesterday when the story broke, but you know, like as we go into the weekend, and we're still not quite sure when Shohei and his camp will be comfortable. Kind of, and again, they do have to have this at some point, just to kind of. There's a lot of questions, you know. At some point, they do have to have some kind of a press conference, which Shohei absolutely does not want. And when I say that again. When you were praising Shohei, when you wanted to do a feature story saying how amazing Shohei Ohtani was, he was not comfortable doing that. Mm-hmm. This is the opposite of that. There's a lot of hard questions that we need to ask Shohei. Your thoughts on how this is all playing out?
I just don't like it. I don't like just anything against him or the Dodgers right now. I mean, this was supposed to be, I know that this is probably going to go away a little bit once we start getting into games. Like right now, there's not really else much to talk about other than spring training.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously people are going to run with the story. Once we start getting into like division races and how people are playing in the first half of the year, I feel like it's going to be pushed a little bit under. But in terms of right now, it just sucks that this cloud is over the team and over him. And I put this in the article I wrote yesterday, is that I just hope that this doesn't affect the team in any way. I hope this doesn't, you know, because usually these things tend to just hang over a team for a while, whatever investigation it is. Whenever there's something against one of your teammates, one of the players on your team or your organization, it's going to linger a little bit. But I just hope that this doesn't. I hope this is one of the instances where we can get past this pretty quick and everything's resolved and we know the facts are facts and we can get back to playing baseball, because, you know, everyone here knows that Shohei Ohtani is an electric player and this is supposed to be one of the most anticipated seasons of all time. I mean, this is a big market guy going to a big market team, and I just hope that this doesn't cloud that. You know, from everything that I've read, it seems like Shohei is in the clear. I mean, look, there was no sports betting on baseball. This is not Pete Rose. This is not, you know, the Black Sox scandal of 1929. You know, this is not rigging anything, you know. You know, at least we're clear of that. We know at least it's not that. So I think people are kind of clouding it with that Shohei Ohtani is the one that's being accused. He is not. Obviously, there's a lot of facts and information that still have to come out, and I'm not making any solidified facts either. But it's just like you guys both mentioned, it's a little, there's conflicting information, right? There's pieces coming from his lawyer, and then there's pieces coming from Ipe himself. And, you know, there's a lot of things flying everywhere right now, and obviously social media is having a ball with it. I mean, the amount of funny things I've seen on social media about it is ridiculous. But in terms of the actual thing itself, I think I'm just going to wait until everything comes out before I make any assumptions, because honestly, guys, we've seen things like this come up and then nothing happens. And then we've seen things come up like this where it's like, oh my goodness, I did not see this scandal this year. So I'm just going to wait a little bit. But yeah, I mean, going into the weekend and going into the beginning of the season, this is definitely not what you want to hear. Not just as a Dodger fan, but like as an MLB fan in general. Obviously some other teams like this, but you know, as a fan that loves the game, as people that love Shohei Ohtani as a star, you don't want to see this at all.
Yeah, I'm sure Giants fans are like loving it.
I've seen it already. And these are the same teams. These are the same teams, by the way, that wanted him in the first place, and Yamamoto as well. So I don't want to hear that.
Yeah, of course. There's always going to be a stringent of, you know, jealousy / irony / you know, all of the things for, you know, your rival. So it is what it is. I just wanted to do a little poke fun at those Giants fans out there.
Grant, just I guess switching gears to perhaps potentially a more positive thing, the Clippers have a chance tonight to win back-to-back games. Back-to-back games, just period, for the first time since March 6th and 9th, and back-to-back road games. Again, both of these games are taking place in Portland for the first time since February 4th and 5th. It's been a while. Could this be sort of, and again, this is one of those unique road trips where they have back-to-back games in Portland against the Blazers. So they won the first one, look good. And again, no one's saying that Portland is world beaters, but I mean, sometimes it's kind of like when you're going through a rut, you just need a win. And then if you can get back-to-back wins, touch on the significance of the game tonight against Portland.
It's very important. And, you know, over this past month or so, this has been the issue. Like, they look good one game and then the next game, it's kind of like the Lakers, honestly. One game they look great and then one game they don't. But for the Clippers over the past week, it's been nothing but bad. So that win on Wednesday, that was a huge game for them. I mean, that was great to, you know, like James Harden said, get their swag back. That's exactly what he said. Sometimes you need games like that. And for a team that was only half a game up on New Orleans coming into that game, now, you know, New Orleans lost last night, so they have a little bit of a cushion now, which is good. And prayers to Brandon Ingram. He hurt his knee last night, so I hope that he has a speedy recovery. I don't know how severe it is. But for the Clippers, yeah, getting two wins in Portland, that can literally change the energy of the team. I don't care who they're playing. I don't care that it's Portland. When you get big wins and when you do the right processes in those wins, I think that can translate to when you play a good team. And the other thing is that, you know, sometimes during these games I watch, and, you know, the Clippers, they just look way out of sorts. They look like just nothing is going right for them. But there's been a few games here against Minnesota where I see good processes. It's just like there's one or two things off that cost them the game. So it's not like the Clippers have been playing absolutely horrible lottery ball. Yeah. It's just that they've been playing less than we know that they're capable of. So the game on Wednesday against Portland, that was the Clippers that I thought we were going to get in the second half of the season. They were playing with effort, diving across the floor. They were energetic. Kawhi Leonard was bouncing everywhere like he was 10 years younger. Paul George, he's had a good stretch lately. Over his past seven games, he's had 20 plus in each of those. So I think that right now the process is more important to me than who they're playing. And I think, you know, the effort that they showed on Wednesday against Portland, if they can show that again tonight and then carry that into a look, they're going to be on another tough road trip. If you can carry that into that, then towards the end of the season, all this talk that I've been talking about the Clippers, oh my God, the sky is falling. Oh my God, everything's falling down. All that talk, it goes down. It's moot. It's moot talk because they can get momentum going into the playoffs. And I know it's a tough task because you're going to be playing good teams, but with a little bit of a cushion now in the four spot and with a little bit of good effort that I've seen, good energy, I think that, you know, they can put it together if they get their mind right. But that's the big thing with them. They've said it. It's between the ears. Even Kawhi Leonard has said that. It's between the ears. It's not physical. They have to put forth the effort if they want to go on a run here.
Yeah.
Do you believe in the polar opposite? So let's say that they don't go on this win streak. Let's say they don't go back-to-back wins. Like, where do they stand there? Like, you know, and I get the mental aspect, especially this late in the season. You know, it is always about the mental because yeah. you're probably trying to prepare for the postseason, right? Prepare to go on that run. But if this doesn't happen, is it a make or break? Because we're getting to crunch time right now. We're getting to, you know, playoffs and June is just around the corner. So
yeah, it certainly is make or break time. I mean, you know, if the Clippers were, you know, in the 2 or 3 seed and it was kind of guaranteed that they'd be, that they've had home court advantage against anybody, then I'd say, okay, I'm not really as worried. The issue here, G-Hay, is that the Pelicans are playing some of the best basketball in the second half of the season so far. And since the All-Star break, they've been one of the best teams. Now they're half a game, one and a half games behind you. So you could lose that home court in the first round, which is so important because the Clippers, when they play New Orleans, it's never good. They never play well there. They've got one win this year, but before that, they never win in New Orleans. So that's a tough matchup regardless. So right now, you kind of have to go on a run. I know I said that I think they will, but you kind of have to. There's really no other option because not just them, but Dallas is playing well. Sacramento's playing well. So if you do, like you said, do the opposite and they start playing like they did it during this 4 out of 5 loss streak, then you could find yourself in the 5 or 6 spot. And then you could be playing either Denver or Minnesota in the first round on the road. You could be playing New Orleans on the road. And that is not what this team wants. I know that they've said, oh, I just want to be top 6. Getting a top 4 seed is very crucial. So the effort that they put forth on Wednesday, I think they should carry that because that was a team that looked like, hey, it's make or break time. That looked like a playoff team right there playing with playoff effort. So you're right. It's a very fine line, but honestly, they have to go on a run or else I think they could be a first round exit if they're on the road in round one. That's my honest opinion.
To Grant's point, they got a game and a half lead. Again, the reason that that's important is that they do not have the tiebreaker over the Pelicans. In fact, I mean, and Grant will be the first to tell you, I mean, they really don't have the tiebreaker against the majority of the playoff teams out there. So they really do have to get, you know, a one game lead on the Pelicans. Because again, if there's a game 7, you don't want to have that game on the road. By the way, Grant, GK showed me this clip of James Harden playing the best defense he did all year against Kawhi Leonard. What happened on that play? Like, why is that?
So the Clippers were feeling themselves. They were amidst like a 21-4 run. And James Harden, I mean, he looked like he was trying to have a little bit more fun and, you know, than he did lately. He goes around a screen from Zubats and Kawhi is open in the corner. He dishes it out to Kawhi and he closes out on Kawhi Leonard like he's the defender, like he's playing for the Portland Trailblazers. Kawhi misses the shot. I mean, this would have put them up, I think, 24. He misses the shot. Fortunately for James Harden, Zubats slapped it out back to James Harden for a rebound. But yeah, I think James Harden after the game said, look, we've been in the midst of this really rough stretch and I just wanted to bring some fun back to the team, which I applaud, but maybe don't close them out as close as you did, because that was like a pretty good, that was like some of the best defense I've seen James Harden play this year, honestly. He's that was a really good closeout. So maybe just seize back a little bit.
Here's my thing. You can have fun all day long. Maybe choose something different.
Exactly.
Bring some like levity to, you know, this losing streak you've been having and, you know, trying to get back into the game. I'm all for fun. I don't care. But like, that didn't look like it was fun, and it made him miss the shot. Like, it just, yeah, he just, God bless you, honey. God
bless you. Before we close out and head into the weekend, I just wanted to highlight again the women's tournament. And I'm not just, well, actually, I am saying this because I'm a USC fan. I mean, I am infinitely more intrigued, enthralled, and invested in the women's tournament. Saturday, USC begins their journey. And by the way, USC, UCLA, UNLV, UC Irvine, I think a lot of our local teams are in the women's tournament. GA, real quick before we close out for the weekend. Again, you know, probably not going to get a great matchup that first game, but if USC wins, it'll be a fun matchup in the second round. I think they get the winner of Kansas, Michigan. But anyways, Juju Watkins, USC, again, Caitlin Clark and Iowa. You go down the list, South Carolina. What are you most looking forward to with the women's tournament?
That is a good question. I'm looking forward to any of my three brackets that I filled out winning any of them. And this is the first year that I filled out a women's bracket. I know, sacrilege. But yeah. Yeah, you know what? I am hopping on that Woman of Troy train, guys. I'm hopping on the bandwagon for the Woman of Troy. I love the fact that, you know, this is a team that they came out with a promo, said, don't pick us. We're going to be the underdog. They're one out of four number one seeds for the tournament. I love that that Juju is a freshman and she's able to do what she's able to do. Yeah. She's a phenomenal player. She's going to change the game. She's incredible. I can't wait till she plays next year. Yeah. Like, talk about being the star. Like, that girl is a star. She's going to be incredible, especially when Caitlin Clark will be in the WNBA. Also being a star. I mean, the girl's still a baller. She's always going to be a baller, but I can't wait to see what Juju has to offer. I don't want to knock the Pac-12, but like the, you know.
It's okay, GK. No one's there. No one's to fight for.
Nobody left.
It doesn't exist anymore. I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to just seeing her play and because not everybody has seen her, right? Not everybody's seen this woman play. Not everybody's seen the potential that she has and that she is a game changer. It's not even a potential. She is a game changer. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to some great buzzer beater shots. We got a lot of great basketball, to be honest with you, when it comes to women's college basketball. Women's college basketball actually keeps you on your toes. They may not have upsets, but they definitely have closer games, and those women can play. So I'm just looking forward to some good basketball. Not worried about them missing bunnies like the men are right now in the NCAA tournament. I'm definitely looking forward to that.
Yeah, well, looking forward to talking about USC and maybe UCLA advancing. And again, I will be watching USC, UCLA, all the women do their thing. Very excited. All right. That is all the time we have for today. Let's do it again next week. Until then, this is Arash Markazi saying stay safe, stay healthy.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.